Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and on today's show, we're going to take a closer look at education policy in the state of Iowa with an emphasis on K-12 schools and recent actions taken by the Iowa legislature to address educational issues. My guest today offers a unique perspective. Really, there's few better to discuss this issue. She's Chris Conoyer. She's the state senator from the 35th District right here in the Quad Cities region. She serves as vice chair of the Senate Education Committee and is a former president of the Pleasant Valley Community District School Board. And most importantly, she's a parent. So she brings a lot to the table to be able to discuss education issues. Senator, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me on, Robin.
Well, I want to start going back to your school board years. What was it that got you motivated to run? And I'll ask that first, and we'll go from there and talk more about your state experience.
Well, I never had any ambitions to run for political office. I can assure you of that. But you mentioned that I am a parent, and I am a proud mother of four children. And, you know, when they were growing up, I was always involved in their lives. I coached soccer and baseball and softball and Cub Scouts. And we were involved with the library and I got involved in the PTA. And then I got involved as the president of the PTA. And then I moved up into the junior high. And what really got me activated to get more involved was when Sandy Hook happened. The victims of that horrible, tragic shooting at the school, the victims were mostly first graders. And my twin boys were actually first graders at the time. And at the time, back in 2012, that shooting was in December of 2012, we didn't have security systems like we do now in schools. I mean, you could walk into my kids' elementary school, the door was open and you were in the front office. And I contacted my school board representative and he did not return my phone calls. So, it kind of got a bee in my bonnet to say, okay, what are we doing to keep our kids safe at school? And with his lack of response or attention to the matter, some friends encouraged me, well, if you don't think he's doing the job, why don't you take a spot? And I thought, oh boy, here we go. So I did. And, it not only got me engaged at the, school board level, at that time, I had kids in high school, junior high, and elementary school. I was very engaged as a parent. And I started really being an advocate for schools and education and getting in touch with my legislators, my local legislators, to advocate for education. And then I started paying attention to other issues that were important to me. And here I am, I'm a state senator now. So it's a different perspective for sure, but I think I bring a lot of good experience.
So here's free advice for everybody out there who holds office: return your phone calls within a decent amount of time. You'll have a better chance at a long career than by not doing that. I've got to ask, you ran for the state Senate one in 2019. But during COVID, there was talk of the narrative is that a lot of parents were walking by, kids were at home on their laptops attending classes remotely, and that parents were outraged by what their kids were being taught. Now, this was a key issue in the Virginia governor's race, as you know. Did you have that experience? And that kind of leads to this whole idea of culture wars in the schools. Did you have that experience? And what's your view on your school district, what you've learned, and in Iowa generally, on whether those issues exist?
Yeah, I think the experiences vary widely across the board. You know, one thing that I enjoyed when my kids were home learning remotely is that I got to listen to their orchestra lessons, which I thought was pretty cool. But I also noticed that the engagement and the impact of learning wasn't necessarily as engaging as I thought it should be. So that it was a little disappointing from that respect. You know, I'm involved with my kids' education, and you know, I think my kids are going to be fine, but there's other kids out there that really need that face-to-face, engaged, impactful, you know, instruction from their teachers. And I think teachers did the best they could, you know, but we also faced the issue of who has access to the internet. You know, we were setting up hotspots in parking lots so kids could go do homework. And that's obviously not a great situation for learning. So we certainly did learn a lot of lessons on just being connected and making sure all kids have access. You know, a lot of schools went to that one-to-one laptop before COVID, which helped that kids had the devices, but having the connection, the internet connection, is something that still continues to be a very important issue for us, not just for learning, but, you know, we've expanded telehealth and, you know, people are working a lot more remotely from home too. So making sure that we have that high-speed broadband continues to be an important issue. In terms of, you know, what they were learning, I didn't hear a lot personally. I've heard a lot of stories about what parents were hearing in terms of what their children were being taught or what they were being exposed to in the classroom that they weren't excited about. So personally, you know, I've had some issues with teachers who, you know, a handful, I will say, teachers that have a problem with me. I don't certainly want them to take that out or impact my children's education. What I do for a living or decisions that I make on behalf of the state should not impact my children when they go to school. And I know that there's some, you know, educators out there that don't always agree with all of my votes. And so, you know, personally, I have been impacted on that level. But, you know, there are certainly situations and stories we've heard from across the state of, you know, situations where various political views are being shared with kids. And, you know, we've got standards. We've got the Iowa core. We've got standards that teachers are supposed to be teaching. And, you know, one of my kids' science teachers at the high school said, if you know my political affiliation, I'm not doing my job. And I thought, there you go. That's exactly correct. You know, you can have conversations about current events, or you can even talk about politics, but, you know, don't push your political agenda on the students. You know, have a conversation, you know, allow them to speak freely and defend their positions on various issues and learn how to disagree agreeably. I should say that correctly, you know, and be able to share information. You know, I have friends that are all along the political spectrum, and, you know, I learn things from them. They learn things from me. And, you know, there's a lot of common ground. I believe that most Iowans and Quad Cityans, for that matter, are, you know, somewhere near the middle, or, you know, not too far out on the fringe. And I think that there's a lot of common ground that we as Midwesterners and Iowans and Quad Cityans have in common. And we just need to find that common ground. And, you know, that's what I think the role of education is, being able to research and form your own opinions and then defend those opinions in a respectable, agreeable way.
I want to ask you about phones and school, and this goes to the larger role of social media. This is a big issue. I'm currently reading a book where the author is calling for schools to ban, K-12 schools to ban phones. I teach the college level, as my listeners know, and I battle students with phones there. What's your view, I guess, as a parent and as a policymaker in Des Moines? Is this issue coming? Are you going to leave it up to local school districts, or what are your thoughts on that issue?
Yeah, well, there's been a few bills that have come through the legislature regarding cell phone access. But, you know, as a former school board member, and I also, to supplement my income as a part-time state legislator, I substitute teach in school. So I see firsthand in the classroom how distracting phones can be. And a lot of, you know, I think it should be dealt with on the local level, either by the individual school district or the teacher in the classroom. You know, I've been to school districts where phones are, you check them in a little, you know, kind of a calculator holder. As soon as you walk in the classroom, they're put on silent and you don't use them. And you pick them up on your way out the door so they aren't a distraction. And you can say they're not a distraction, but if those phones are anywhere near the kids' hands and they're beeping or they're going off, the kids are paying attention to them and they're a distraction. So, you know, I think that there have been a few bills that have been brought up. It's definitely a discussion we've had at the legislature because we hear about it from educators and from districts. You know, what can we do? You know, you walk around and you see kids with iPads in their hand as young as 1 and 2 years old, or phones in their hands to keep them occupied. And unfortunately, it's a very addictive thing, obviously. And, you know, kids need to learn how to get their hands back on books and not be so dependent on technology. You know, there's a time and a place for technology in schools. But, you know, we need to make sure that we know when the appropriate times for that technology is. But again, I think it should be dealt with at the district and even the classroom level by the educators as kids walk in the door. And kids need to be respectful of whatever the rules are in that classroom and be able to function without a phone in their hand.
I will just say, too, in fairness, that there's a lot of adults that are addicted to their phones, too. I see it every day. And that's a topic for another show completely.
Oh, I do, but, too. I mean, I go out to a restaurant and I see a family sitting at a table and they're all staring at their phones and it just breaks my heart.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I go to the YMC every morning and people are sitting on the machines looking at their phones instead of getting out of the way. But anyway, I don't want to go on a rant here. I wanted to talk about another issue here. That's vaping. That may be one that folks aren't aware of, but I know you had some involvement with that. I'd like you to share with our listeners.
Yeah. So when I was on the school board, our school resource officers, which are very important individuals in our schools, not only do they keep us safe, but they also form really incredible relationships with students and give a good relationship between law enforcement and students. And I think that's really important. But when I was on the school board, you know, they would come in with just bags of vaping products that they were confiscating from students. And it was a real problem. So a few years ago, we raised the vaping age from 18 to 21. And that helped for a bit. But they've come back with a vengeance. And excuse me, as a train goes through my front yard. There he goes. Anyway, but it's come back with a vengeance. And you see vaping stores, strategically close to schools. And, I'm hearing from students who are advocating for healthy behaviors with their colleagues, you know, their fellow students. I'm hearing from teachers, what a distraction these vaping products are in school. And the school resource officers are telling us what they're finding in schools. And, you know, what we've learned with this bill, the vape registry bill that we passed this year, that's already been passed in several other states. What we learned is a lot of these vaping products have never gone through the process of being evaluated and tested by the FDA. And these are things that are being marketed to kids. There's a lot of, fruity flavors and fancy flavors and very colorful packaging. They're being endorsed, you know, by celebrities. They're being marketed towards kids and they are ingesting them in their bodies without having any idea of what is inside them. There's no standards for the packaging. In fact, I saw an example of a vaping product that said, and this was back in April, it said it was manufactured in July of 2024, which was interesting because that was 4 months into the future. So, really you have no idea what's in these products. They haven't been tested by the FDA and they're being marketed to kids, but they're also being, you know, marketed to adults also as alternatives to smoking and nicotine. And I think that they are an important part of people who are trying to get away from cigarettes and that type of nicotine. But we need to make sure that people know what they are ingesting into their bodies. So the vape registry that we passed this year requires that any vapor product that's being sold in the state of Iowa has to either already be FDA approved or on the list to be evaluated by the FDA. There's quite a bit of a backlog right now, and a lot of products aren't even on the list. So they have to be on the list or already FDA approved, and they also have to be registered through the state of Iowa. And I think that that's going to go a long way to get a lot of these illegal products. And, you know, that's another question. How are all these illegal products getting into all these stores? Well, they're coming in large shipping containers from China, and somehow they're slipping through the system and they're getting into these stores and there's absolutely no oversight whatsoever. And, you know, never mind the fact that they're not being taxed like nicotine products. So, we've missed the boat on here and we're trying, you know, the cows are out of the barn and we're trying to get them back in the barn and really just keep people safe so that they know what they're buying.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is State Senator Chris Knoyer from the 35th District, right here in the Quad Cities region. We've been talking a lot about school policy in Iowa, and she's in a great position to be very a local expert on that. She's the vice chair of the Senate Education Committee. She's a former member of the Mount Pleasant School Board. And she's a mom, most importantly, a parent of four children. So we've been talking about a few issues here. I wanted to go move into another one here, and that's school choice. Iowa's passed some very far-reaching school choice legislation. How's that going so far from what you've heard? And the big complaint, and this even comes from some Republican legislators, is that school choice really isn't as practical for rural schools because they don't have choices.
Well, okay, so we're a year into it, and the window to apply for the second year just closed on June 30th at midnight. So we're still waiting to see what the numbers are. There was more interest in it than we had anticipated last year. But, to answer your question, you're right. There, rural schools don't really have, the options of private schools. Some might pop up at some point now that we have the educational school savings accounts, but we'll see. There are those choices in the more urban areas. In fact, I went to a school choice forum in the Quad Cities in Bettendorf a couple of weeks ago, and all of the schools in the area on the Iowa side were present and, made their pitch for, what they offered their schools. And what's interesting to me is the variety of private education that exists in the Quad Cities. Some of them are Christian based. Some of them are not affiliated or religious based at all. Some are Catholic. And so, there are, some of them are more focused on classical education. So it's interesting to me. But I think, as a former school board member, going into the legislature, I wasn't somebody that was fully on board with the idea of school choice. I was concerned about what impact it would have on public schools and the funding of public schools. But, we have had, luckily we've got a really good, solid budget, and we are in a good financial position in the state of Iowa. So the implementation of the educational savings accounts and school choice in Iowa did not take away from our investment in public schools, which was really important to me. And the ESA amount that goes to public school or private school students every year is going to be tied with the increase to public school students too. So those are tied together. So students are treated in an equitable way, which I think is really important. I've seen in other states that have implemented school choice in other areas, that number still is around 5 to 7% of the total student population. We have about 500,000 students K through 12 in the state of Iowa. So I think, most of our public schools are fantastic. My kids go to public school. I'm public school educated. My mother was a teacher. My grandmother was a teacher in public schools. I think a lot of parents will still continue to choose public schools as the primary source of education for their students. But I think what's really important here is that if public schools are not meeting the needs of particular students, that they should be given the option to explore other options, and it shouldn't be based on their ability to pay for it. So having those educational savings accounts for parents to be able to try other forms of education for their students, I think is good. And I think, it does create some competition in the system. I've seen it in my district where, private schools are out there making the case for students to use their ESAs and come to the private schools, but it's caused the public schools to say, hey, we're a great choice for you too. And here's all the great things that happen if you send your kids to the public schools and what we offer. So, I think maybe as educators and, maybe as Midwesterners, we don't toot our own horns enough. So, make the case on why your school district or your school is the best choice for a student to attend and all the opportunities that will help prepare them for post-secondary success, and parents will pay attention, and that's where they'll want their kids to go.
You had some action also on having the State Board of Education kind of conduct a review. And I'm wondering if that's directly related and if it's kind of an effort to improve performance of public schools where all this ties in together.
Yeah. And, you know, as we continue to evolve in a, you know, knowledge-based economy, global economy, we want to make sure that our students are well prepared for whatever it is that they decide to do after high school. It's not always a four-year degree. It could be a two-year community college, could be an intern or apprenticeship, could be the military, or it could be going directly into the workforce. And we want to make sure that kids have the skills they need to be able to be prepared for whatever it is they do. And I think part of that is making sure that our graduation requirements and the curriculum that we're teaching is keeping up with what's needed for kids to be successful after they graduate from high school. And we want to make sure that we're creating lifelong learners and kids that can adapt to that changing landscape and what's needed in the workforce to meet the needs of our local employers too. Because, you know, there are jobs that exist today that didn't exist 10 years ago, and there's going to be jobs in 10 years that didn't exist today. So, you know, we want to make sure that we're producing critical thinkers who can, you know, dig into topics and be able to adapt and communicate and problem solve and work with people and communicate and be successful in whatever it is that they have to do. So I think a curriculum review and a review of our graduation requirements to make sure that they're aligned with not only our local workforce, but also just whatever kids decide to go into, that they're prepared.
One of the big emerging issues is the role of artificial intelligence. And I know you've got a tech background in your career, so this issue fits into your expertise as well. But there's a lot of concern about that. I know as a part-time college professor, we've had discussions about it. How do you know if a student is using AI to complete a paper or not? So I'm just curious what your discussions have been in Des Moines about this, what your thoughts are, where is this issue going, and what's the role of state government or is there one in managing this?
Yeah, well, thank you for asking a technology question. I'm the chair of the technology committee, and I have a degree in computer science, and I actually did my science fair project in eighth grade in 1984 on artificial intelligence. So this is not something that just... Wow. Happened overnight. It's been coming along and developing over many, many decades now. And you know, it's something that we're hearing more and more about how it's being used. You know, it can be used in very, very effective ways to help with decision making and help make lives easier and better. But it can also be used in malicious ways. So we want to make sure that, you know, students, we don't want to ban them completely from using artificial intelligence and using that technology, but we want to be able to teach them how to use it responsibly and, most importantly, ethically, to make sure that they're not plagiarizing, they're doing the work. You know, they can leverage that technology, but do it in a responsible way that shows that they're doing the work as well, because it is something that they're going to need, they could potentially need, or they're going to be exposed to after they leave the K-12 system. So we want to make sure that they just understand how to use it responsibly and ethically. And that's a real challenge because, you know, it's another thing that is that something that we need to add to our graduation requirements? Is that something that we need to, you know, another layer that we need to put on teachers to be experts in? So we certainly need to make sure that teachers have the professional development, the resources that they need to be able to check a student's work to make sure that it's authentic.
So we don't need to worry about robots taking over everything in the near term.
Well, they're coming. They're coming.
A couple topics here, and they kind of go together to kind of close out our interview. We've got like 3 or 4 minutes left here. I know the legislature took some action on school safety issues, but you also, this issue of grooming students, which can you kind of describe that for our listeners that may not be aware, and talk here for the next 3 or 4 minutes just a little bit about some of the more important actions you took on school safety?
Yeah, well, we want to make sure, you know, students can't learn if they don't feel safe. And we want school to be a place where they feel safe and they can focus on learning. And, you know, I mentioned school resource officers. Those are certified police officers who are in the schools, not only keeping our kids safe, but also, you know, creating positive relationships with law enforcement between students and making sure that they stay on track if they're starting to go off track. I mentioned that we have secure entrances on our schools. We have anti-bullying programs. We're investing more in children's mental health and with counseling. And we set up operational sharing so districts can share counselors to make sure that they're available to students when they need them. But grooming is something where an adult would form a relationship with a young person under 18 that is leading at some point to a sexual relationship. And grooming is something that should not ever happen, especially in schools between teachers and students. And unfortunately, we've heard too many cases where teachers and students are having inappropriate relationships, sometimes sexual in nature, and that is not okay. That is not a safe place for a student. And that is not appropriate for an adult, especially a teacher or someone who works in the schools who has some sort of authority over the students to be able to form a relationship that they turn into a sexual in nature. So grooming is something that's been an issue in the district that I represent. And we made sure that there were some loopholes in the system where teachers, if they got caught doing something like that, they would simply just change to another school district and repeat the behaviors. So we wanted to make sure that the Board of Educational Examiners was involved. We wanted to make sure that the reporting was in place. And, you know, and we also wanted to protect teachers because we do want teachers and students to have those trusted relationships. So we wanted to make sure that there were some definitions so that a teacher, who did develop a relationship with a student who needed, some extra help or some extra care at school, was going to have some due process if there was an allegation made. So I think we found the right balance there to keep kids safe, to keep the teachers safe, and make sure that we know what boundaries should be in place between a teacher and a student at school, and make sure students feel like they're in a safe place to learn.
We still have a little bit of time left here, so I'm going to bring all this together and ask a final question in about a minute's time here. Since we're talking about schools, what's your grade, the report card for Iowa schools? And again, this not just public schools, but the entire Iowa educational system. What grade would you give right now and why?
Oh, gosh. That's a tough question. I think we learned a lot of lessons during COVID. And we, as a substitute in schools, I see that we are still recovering from the learning loss and especially the social emotional. But I think we need to make sure that we are continuing to work with our business partners and our employers in the region to make sure that we're providing the skills and the education that our students need to be able to fill those important roles as they go out into post-secondary, whatever it is they decide to do. But we can always do better, but I think the competition with school choice is going to be good for all kids. And I think that, we're going to continue working. We're going to continue investing in schools and make sure that our kids have the best education right here in Iowa.
Okay. We got all the topics in. I was hoping to. So it's been a very informative interview here. And I hope our listeners were similarly pleased with the information provided. My guest today on Heartland Politics has been State Senator Chris Quinorier from the 35th District in Iowa in the Quad Cities region. Senator, thank you so much for taking the time, and I look forward to having you back sometime.
Thank you, and I'd appreciate that. Thank you, Robin.
Listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK Quad Cities NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.